Good morning. I'd like to begin with a very interesting question. It'll probably give us some serious insight on Jewish leadership. In this week's parsha, we're informed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us this tremendous gift that the Levim, the tribe of Levi, will work for us and do our work and be a substitute for the firstborn. Wondering what was so unique about the tribe of Levi that actually they're fit for the job. Rashi says an interesting thing, that the reason, if you go to page 91, Levim were required to shave. They hopefully have to shave all their bodily hair. And Rashi says they were here the Levim were a substitute for the firstborn who did the sin of the golden calf, which is a punishment. It was idolatry. And idolatry is like dead. Idol worship is considered dead. And a mitzora, a leper, is also considered dead. Therefore, the Levim had to undergo a shaving procedure like mitzora. Interesting. They didn't do anything wrong. What is Rashi talking about? I'd like to begin with a fascinating statement the Ramban makes that on the face of it literally makes no sense. The Ramban, in Parshas Bamidbar, we start counting the Jewish people, makes a very astute observation. Let's say a regular tribe averaged about 50,000 people, men, from the age of 20 on. The entire tribe of Levi, from the age of 30 days on, only have 22,000 people. It's incredible. The tribe, all the other tribes, are 600,000, divided around 50,000. The tribe of Levi only had 22,000, but it wasn't, everybody else was counted from 20 up. Levi counted from 30 days up, only has 12,000, so it's minuscule in terms of the other tribes. That's the Ramban's observation. So the Ramban says the following explanation for this. He says, if we go back to the Parsha Shmos, that the Egyptians kept on oppressing us with hard labor, and the Torah says, Kashir ya'anir osam, as they were Jews, were oppressed, kein yir b'vechein yifruz. The Egyptians were trying to break them, and God said, I'm going to make them prolific. And that was really, was very unusual. They should have so many children. But because it was God's response to the Egyptians trying to keep them down. Shavit Levi, I'm telling you what the Ramban says, Shavit Levi did not work. So therefore, Shavit Levi didn't have the blessing of Kashir Ya'anu, some Kenya. They didn't work, so therefore they didn't multiply. They weren't so prolific. That's what Nachmanides writes. A very interesting question on that. I'll just quickly go back to Parsha Shmos. So he's saying like this, that the reason all the other tribes, they proliferated in a very great fashion because they were oppressed. It was a special thing. In fact, Rashi points out, Pharaoh said, I'm going to put them down. I'm going to destroy the libido. I'm going to break them physically. And God said, you're going to do this? They're going to have more children. The question is like this. The Torah opens up the Parsha of Shmos, and it says like this. In the sixth sentence, it says everybody a generation died, and then it says, U'b'nei Yisrael, and the Jewish people, poru, they were fruitful, v'yishritzu, they spread out, v'yirbu, and they were numbered, and they were powerful, b'mod mod, and the land was full with them. There was a tremendous proliferation. After this proliferation, a new king arises on Egypt, translate sentence, and he says to his people, behold, the Jewish people are greater in number and stronger than us. We need a plan. Otherwise, they're going to either overthrow us or join our enemies. And that's when he started putting the taxation on them and the slavery on them. That's after they were prolific. It had nothing to do. There was an additional, they became prolific afterwards, another thing. But they were tremendously prolific, more than the Egyptians. There's probably 300,000-400,000 Jews already. It's almost 100 years after they got down there, just about 100 years. And before Pharaoh started his slavery, before he started his real slavery, so lady, these blessings, there was a blessing, an initial blessing that had nothing at all to do with the fact that they were working. It was because they were so prolific that Pharaoh says they're a greater number than us. Now, it's true that he starts breaking them and starting to knock them down. Okay, so then God compensated, maybe overcompensated. But that Levi should have a minuscule amount, what happened to the proliferation of before? Whatever the number was, there was 300,000 Jews, then Shevet Levi should have had 25,000 from the age of 60 up. So the whole thing is very difficult to understand. What is the Ramban talking about? I want to explain the Ramban this morning, I believe, because it really seems to make no sense. A very interesting law that the Gemara learns out. When the Jews went down to Egypt, after Yosef revealed himself, it was the second year of the famine, the Jews went down to Egypt, and the Torah says, they greeted Yosef, and Yosef had two sons that were born before the famine. Those two boys were born before the famine. Talmud says, what's the message of it? What do we have to know before the famine? So the Talmud says a very interesting law. It is forbidden to have marital relations when there's a hunger going on. Not allowed to have marital relations when a hunger is going on. A similar thing Rashi brings in Parshas Noach, that when the flood started coming down and the world was in danger, Noah had to separate from his, the men and women were separate. Rashi brings this in Parshas Noah. So it's not only famine, the Olam is Shori B'Tsar, when the world is in some suffering, some type of suffering, then therefore you have to separate from your wife. Moses asked a very interesting question. This is a Gemara. The first part about fast is a Gemara in the Tractate Tanis, page 11a. It's worthwhile taking a look at it. Tosa asked a very interesting question. When the Jews came down 2 years in the famine, the Torah tells us that Yocheved was born as they arrived in Egypt. That means Yocheved, Levi's daughter, was conceived a year into the famine. How could it be? You're not allowed to have relations. Tosa is a very interesting answer. Tosa suggests the following thing. He says that it's not really a forbidden thing. It's not forbidden. It's a midas chasidus. It means it's a taking the high moral road. And so Yosef did that, but the rest of the people did not observe that. That's what Tosa says. Now, that's a very difficult answer. I mean, Levi is to mechel v'rechel ish chasidecho. This is the progenitor of all the holiness of Jewish people. To say that Yosef is a tzaddik, we know that. But to say that Levi didn't do that, I find a little, I mean, the question is very compelling. I'd like to suggest a different answer. I think a much more compelling answer, too. In fact, I'm not really sure I even understand why Tosas doesn't say this answer. What is the reason it's a famine around me, or the world is suffering, why do I have to separate from my wife? Why is that a healthy thing to do? It's enough to suffer. The famine's enough suffering. The oncoming onslaught of the flood is enough of a problem. You know, resuming normal marital relations is actually a way of giving joy to a person. I think it must be, to me, the simplest reading is like this. The people that are suffering are going through it. There's absolutely no reason why they should separate. Exactly the opposite. The people that actually are being hammered, there's no food, there's a danger, there's a flood, there's a tornado. There's no reason. You don't want to make them, it's difficult enough. You want them to keep as vital and as normal as possible so they can withstand this problem. the Talmud said that resuming normal relationships makes happiness with a couple. It's bad enough that they don't have what to eat, bad enough that they're that Hurricane Andrew is there. That's very scary. So I don't think there's any midas chasidus for the people going through it. The opposite. The person going through it is suffering. What about someone that's not suffering? Yosef over there is sitting in Egypt. He's sitting in Egypt in the royal, first of all, Egypt itself, there was an abundance of food. And even during the 2 years of famine, they had so many storehouses of food. He's not suffering any food shortages at all. So therefore, people are suffering. That's the right thing, is to empathize with their suffering. Other people are suffering and I should go around life normal. That is a great shortcoming. When everybody has a problem and I don't have that problem, I have to identify with community suffering. We're all part of fellow travelers, we're brothers. It's not right that I should be enjoying my life with everybody else. If you care about a person, when they're suffering, you can't be happy. And therefore, we'll say it's even a midas chasidus, not a legal obligation, but it's the proper moral thing to do, is to identify with the suffering. And therefore, Yosef did that. Levi is living among those that have a famine. Originally, they had enough food, but by the time they came down, there's a real shortage of food, even by Yaakov's. The first trip, they had food. The neighbors shouldn't think they have a lot of food. But the second time that there was a shortage by them too, they're running out of food, then they were suffering too. There's absolutely no reason when you're suffering to be able to have to separate. That's why Levi, in other words, I'm saying like this, the law of separation is only if you are not suffering and to identify with those that are suffering. But the person that's suffering, you want his life to be as normal as possible. Because there's enough anguish and anxiety from the problem, as much as a support, emotional support, doesn't make sense he should put new burdens on himself. Someone who is not suffering, to identify with those that are suffering, is a very valuable thing. That's what I think is the simplest answer to Tosfos' question. Now, I agree with Tosfos, it was a midas chasid. This is not a law, but Levi would do minis chasidus too, but it doesn't make sense if you're amidst the suffering, you try and keep yourself as normal as possible. Now, everybody had 30,000, let's say, children. Tremendous, before anything started. Now, what happens? And then what happens then? Pharaoh makes a tremendous decree on the Jewish people. They're going to enslave them and backbreaking work. Now, we know that they weren't forbidden to have relations, the opposite. As to this, God, not only did they have relations, God made them more prolific. Because the fact that everybody's suffering doesn't make sense that they should separate from their wives. It's enough they're getting beaten up by Pharaoh, demeaned by him. And therefore, of course, they had normal relations. Even though the world is in sorrow, but you keep normal. That's exactly what they did. Not only that, God gave a great blessing. Shevet Levi is not working. What do they do? I say Shevet Levi separated from their wives. They didn't do it because everybody else is going through this backbreaking. People, kids are being drowned. They're used being as mortar. So the way they identified with this, when the world is in sorrow, you identify by depriving yourself too. That's your way of internalizing that what's happening to somebody else is relevant to you. For whatever reason, God deemed that you should be the tribe that should be freed from that, but you still have to identify with their pain. Therefore, probably, even though there may be a probably there was some permission given, and the fact that if you haven't fulfilled Purim Vu, that's already a discussion whether you could have children. Even the Midas, if you have no children at all. So probably like this. Levi started off 100 years earlier with 30,000. But in the last 100 years, when everybody else was suffering, they didn't have any kids. So therefore, they went down. Maybe they tried to have one or two, but no more. Because they took it upon themselves to empathize with the loss of their brethren. That the fact that God spared me and gave me a role to study and to be the rabbi and to be the rabbinical, that's not a reason that I should be opposite. I have to empathize, I have to become part of your suffering. And therefore, that's why they're numb. That's what Ramban is saying. The only thing is, those that suffered had more. And Levi didn't suffer, being therefore they didn't have any particular blessing of having more and more kids. Because actually, they separated from their wives. And they just did very minimal. Now, it's true, even the minimal, they could have had 12 kids at a time. 6 kids at a time, like the rabbi said, the other tribes do. So that they didn't have that blessing. So it was minimal, minimal, and therefore the numbers in 100 years went down. I think that's the I think that's what the Ramban means. And the Ramban is saying like this. Because they, even though they had limited relations, because if you haven't fulfilled, you don't have to self-disappear from the world, so you can probably have 2 children just to replace yourself that you can have, even when everybody else is suffering. But to have more than that, you wouldn't have. And the fact that you're having children, you could have had, God could have made multiple births. He could have made, like, the others had 6 at a time, so you're even becoming more prolific. Wrong. Only those that suffered had that. Those that didn't suffer didn't have that. So therefore, over the course of 100 years, it went down from having 22,000 to, from 22,000 to, I mean, from 30,000 or maybe even more from the age of 20 on, in 100 years, they went to 22,000 from 30 days up. That's what I think is the... And by the way, just...
Why didn't they just count them like everybody else?
Well, that's another question. That's because the Rashi says, because they're God's legion, and therefore they have... From the day they're born, basically, they are in the service of God. The other Jews, till they achieve 20, don't get communal responsibility, because it's when you go to war. And Levi, their whole upbringing, their whole orientation, the day of birth is 30 days on, up, is to actually be part of God's legion.
Is it a measure because they don't have a pigeon? Because they don't have a pigeon. They're never relieved from that. The Levian don't have a pigeon and Ben.
Because
they're never relieved of the duties that they have, even from the 30 days old.
Right.
When you see so much suffering for your kids, really brutal, and don't you have a duty not to bring other kids to the same? You're talking about extreme situations.
No, that we know can't be the solution, because God, instead of having 1 child, God made 6. You know, He wanted you to continue. Yeah, God is giving you a message. I want you to bring more kids. Originally, that was a thought, actually, and Amram separated from his wife, and then understanding that our obligation is to be prolific. That discussion was an early on discussion when they started drowning the children. Should we stop having children? But that was originally thought, and then was resolved that we're going to keep on having children. That was an initial, the Talmud records a discussion between Amram, who was the leader of the Jewish people, divorced his wife, and everybody else did. And then he changed his mind, which, by the way, from there, it's also, he had children. Probably, I don't think he would have had more than 2, Amram. Except he needed to show people that he made a mistake, and therefore he remarried his wife. He was the cause of everybody divorced. He already had 2 children. He was the cause of everybody getting divorced. And now he wants to say, I made a mistake, and you should get remarried. And therefore, he had 1 more child, Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what I think probably happened there. But in principle, we have to empathize with the suffering of others, and that's really the definition of who Shevet Levi is. It's just so we know from the statistics that we know this is what the rabbis say, that there's multiple births. Actually, the statistics bear this out. There's 600,000 Jews, men, and there's only, of the 600,000 men, 22,000 firstborn. That means they had multiple births. It means people had many, many children. And in normal, if we take our friends, 2-3 children, among 600,000 men, you're going to have much more than firstborns. You're going to be much more than 22,000, right? Probably 100,000, maybe even more. 1 out of 3 would be a firstborn. And therefore, that's bears fruit, that there was a tremendous amount, that they had many, many children. Just to say that what the rabbis are saying, they're darshaning and pasuk, but the statistics tell us the same thing. 600,000 boys and 22,000 firstborn. It means people had many, many children. If I had 10 children, and the first one was a girl, I have 10 children, I only have one firstborn. You know, you have one out of 18 is the firstborn. 60, yeah, one out of 18 is the that doesn't make any sense. One out of 18 boys is firstborn. That means it must have been very large and probably a lot of multiple births too. Okay, now, having said this, the Torah is not giving us an enormous... And Levi is the tribe that is devoted to being our spiritual leaders. Levi is our Talmidei Chachamim. Levi, in order to get into this position, the rest of the Jewish people went through a feeling, participants in the game, a feeling of being dead. They had to empathize with that too. They had to go through the cutting of the hair like a mitzvah. They had to also have the feeling of dead. Rashi says, before they were installed, just like they're replacing the firstborn. But it's not just you replace them. You actually have to go through what they went through to be their replacement. They empathize with the feeling they were dead. They got into an activity that gave them a feeling of being dead. I mean, physically dead, but emotionally dead. Therefore, they needed to go through that too. They actually replacing Levi totally empathizes, which means our Talmidei Chachamim, our tribe that has the responsibility for giving us Torah values, is outstanding in one thing. They empathize with us. They feel close to us. Our suffering is their suffering. Our joys are their joys. Without that, you don't have Talmidei Chachamim Mar B'Shol. They have responsibility to create harmony among us. You can't create harmony if when you're suffering, I don't feel part of that. Harmony means we're a unified entity. And in order to feel we're a unified entity, I have to identify with what you go through. And therefore, the tribe of Levi, who is the tribe that has the responsibility for Torah, halacha, responsibility for our moral compass, responsibility for our spiritual direction, helping us in the Beis HaMikdash, all the services either through the Kohen or the Levi. And therefore, they need to be empathetic, and they have to create shalom. Leadership means you have to empathize. And by the way, Levi earlier on showed this too, even when he wasn't yet Levi. When Dina was abducted, so the Torah says the following thing. The two brothers of Dina, Achei Dina, they took swords and they went in to wipe out the city of Shechem. So Rashi said, what do you mean the brothers of Dina? Everybody was the brothers of Dina. Rashi says, because they put their life on the line to protect her, that's called a brother. So Levi, earlier on, when my sister is abducted, I can't stand by and let my sister be abducted. Even before he was Levi, he's 13 years old. But that feeling of empathizing with the brother's problems, and by the way, that's not a small message to give our families too. Siblings, if we're not giving siblings the feeling of learning how to empathize with one's problems, to really or identify with the joys of our siblings, we are not doing the job as parents. And they'll come back to bite us, don't worry. But the essence of bringing up children is they have to learn how to empathize and identify. And that's and Shevet Levi is outstanding in this. And there, you can't have leadership, and you shouldn't take leadership, and you won't believe in the leadership as someone who doesn't identify with you. Someone who's pontificating and giving legal decisions that affect your life, you might be a scholar, but is it really something that is the proper decision for me, or is decisions proper? He has to understand me, and he has to feel my pain. He has to, anything. Is this a place where he should be more lenient? Is a place he should be more stringent? Every decision that requires a huge feeling. Two people come in. To me, the definition of a person is two people come in with the same question, they get two different answers. If you get the same answer, that's probably not a posek. A person could only... Shilas are... Each person is a different answer to the question. So either he doesn't know the halach or he doesn't know the people. Either way, that's not a posek. A posek is somebody who has to understand and give him the answer that's right for him. You don't care about a person, it's impossible. So the hallmark of those that have the responsibility of our leadership are people that understand and care about others. That's like the sine qua non of the appointment. And before you get to that position, you know what they just went through? I want to traumatize you with the exact same trauma that they went through. I said that, and they merited this because this is the way they act in Egypt. For 100 years, they separated from the regular marital relations, at least much less, because their brothers were suffering. They felt their pain. If you feel the pain, then you merit becoming somebody who can. Or not, you don't merit, is that you? That is the basic training for becoming somebody who can become our leader. You don't feel their pain, you can't be their leader. If you weren't mishtatef, and actually Rashi says later on, by the policemen who were beaten up in Egypt, that when Pharaoh made the decree, you have to have X amount of bricks, and if you don't do that, you're going to get beaten. They didn't push and push the Jews to do that. They kind of pushed them and pushed them. It could have been done, but it would have been a lot of pushing and a lot of pressuring the Jews to do it. They said, beat us up instead. And because of this, Rashi said, which means they empathized with their son. They couldn't push people to do something that's so hard. Let me get beaten up instead of them. Rashi says, in that merit, that's why now they merited to become on our high court. They became members of the Sanhedrin. Jewish leadership, Torah leadership, is only people that are willing and feel the suffering of others. And said, better I should get beaten up than I should pressure my constituency to do what they have to do. That's what they did in Egypt. They got beaten up, and Rashi is clear, they could have pressured them, but they didn't pressure and said, you know, you pressure a person, you can push and push and push, and he'll do it because he doesn't want to get beaten. So you know what? I'm not pressuring him. I'll take the beating. People like that, they're the ones who sit on our high court. They become members of our Sanhedrin. That's the definition of a Jewish leader, and that's really what all of Shevet Levi embodies. They empathize with the rest of us. They empathize with the world. They empathize with the rest of us. And in that merit, that's why they are our spiritual representatives. And there are Torah, you know, I mean spiritual, the avoda of Hashem, and also the Torah. They're the ones that give us the direction, the ones that we take lessons from, because they understand us and they suffered for us and they feel who we are. That connection is what legitimizes them, what makes them worthy to be our representatives.
Rabbi, this concept that when there's times of danger or famine, you empathize by separating from your wife, it doesn't seem to fit. A better fit might be to eat less, not have dessert, or otherwise. So why is the manner of empathy to separate from your wife the appropriate way to empathize as opposed to something else that might seem to be a better fit?
Well, I think one thing for sure, we all should be eating less. It's going to be hard to justify that as only for this. The benefit to myself is so immediate, you know, probably eating healthier and probably this. So it's probably not, I'm not saying we wouldn't do it, but probably you can do that for yourself. Something you can do for yourself and you should be doing for yourself is probably not as good a tool that I'm really caring about you. You're the motivation. Now, God forbid somebody has some kind of diabetes. Oh, terrible. And you reduce your sugar intake. Now, it's true, I feel bad for him and remind you, but you're doing it for yourself. Because you know it's good for you to do that. And that reminds you it's good for you to do that. So even, I don't know if that's the same element of proof. When you give up something that there's no value to you, and it's actually takes a major part of the relationship, it's like inside of yourself that you're separating from your other half. That's not a something that's good for you, and therefore that becomes a way that you understand, I'm only doing this because I care about somebody else.
What was the answer to the first question on the Rashi?
They had to go through the experience of feeling dead because the people they're representing were dead. Because if you feel that, then you will understand how much you have to do, how much you have to do for them. You know what it felt when you felt dead? When you felt dead, empty, that's the way they feel. It gives you a greater impetus, a greater sensitivity of and motivation to do for others, for those that were dead.
In some respects, they're putting themselves, they're taking the Einish, right? Because the...
Well, they're going through the same thing that they did. That's right. Great jobs.